Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid answers when asked, just got done watching hashtag Sharknado 3. One question, how on earth did April give birth inside a shark? LOL, love it, love ya. Tara Reid said, come on, use your imagination. We're talking about Sharknado. That's why we love it.
Just fill in your own plot hole. The beauty of Sharknado. Just, I thought you were going to open up with, welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast. Matt Moore, I don't want to make an enemy out of you.
Oh, God. I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm just going to seamlessly move on to, hey, how about that preseason?
How about that preseason game?
I was at a preseason game last night.
Yeah, did you look up from whatever it is that you were doing to see the Bosch between the legs pass?
I did. I saw that, and I saw a couple of Gerald Green highlights that were fun.
Yeah, that windmill. That kid. Ooh,
and that's a fun thing. Like, we get windmills, but there aren't a lot of guys who do a full windmill, and he does a full windmill. And it's breathtaking to see in person. And I got to fire off a Green Energy windmill joke on Twitter. Like, it was just a great, great experience. I'm doing my best not to just start a six-man-of-the-year-slash-love-letter campaign to Josh McRoberts. Because I know it was just one preseason game, but I just love the way he fits in with this.
That's what he should be.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of rumors that, like, the Heat were unhappy with him about, like, how his conditioning was going. And yeah. I was like, McRoberts is a pro. Like,
I mean, they were very unhappy. Or at least one very important person in the organization was apparently unhappy about it. Because, I don't know, like, it was a... I don't know the particulars well enough to kind of deliver it, but it was something along the lines of injury slash conditioning last year. But he's come in, he's been everyone, like, after every practice, everyone's just glowing about him because he passes the ball like crazy, and guys love to be passed the ball.
Yeah.
Like, he's easily the favorite teammate in training camp so far, and he looked good, and he'll be great for that second unit, especially considering Mario Chalmers is the quote-unquote backup point guard. Josh McRoberts is, like, really the backup point guard.
He's evolved into, like, one of the best things he can be in this league, which is a guy that makes his teammates better without needing the ball all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best thing that you can be in the NBA, is a guy that makes everybody better and doesn't need the ball. Yeah, I think that they're going to be – I was really impressed watching. I watched several minutes. I haven't watched the entire game, but I flipped through a lot of possessions and watched it, and – like, that Dragic-Bosch pick and roll is going to be a problem.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a problem.
It's so good already. And
it's two guys that understand how to run it so well, and every move is, like, there's no sloppiness. Like, the pass is always perfect. Bosch always catches it. He's immediately making the read. Like, it's two pros that understand how to run that very simple maneuver. It's not even a set, just like that maneuver.
Yeah.
Extremely well.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked to a couple people around the league, and then obviously people around the Heat are excited, but, like, you mentioned, like, hey, what about, like, the Bosch-Dragic pick and pop or pick and roll, and everyone's eyes just light up. Like, whether they're actually good enough to be one of the top teams in the East, or whether they're, you know, able to actually challenge the Cavs, or whether they're just kind of getting back into being a postseason-type contender and it moves along slowly, you know that part will be reliable no matter what, as long as they're healthy.
I don't know. I'm really excited. I know you had said that you were really hesitant coming at media day. Did seeing them in person, even in a preseason game, make you be like, oh, that's right, they have, like, really talented guys all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, I think it. I don't know if one preseason game really changed my opinion. Like, I still want to see everything with Whiteside. I still want to see how Wade holds up. I really don't think Luol Deng should touch the ball unless he's, like, cutting at the basket.
So sad.
Because he really, like, just can't do anything with it. Consistently, but, you know, I don't know. I like their bench, and I like the way certain guys fit in with their roles, and I think Eric Spoelstra's a brilliant coach. I think they have, like, five or six guys that are injury concerns. And so I think that because of that, like, you just need a proper level of hesitancy and caution with what their season could be, but I still think, like, if they're healthy, and, you know, we say that about a lot of teams who end up never being healthy, but if they're healthy, like, they're going to be damn good.
Well, and another thing is, can they score enough two-pointers?
That's... Well, that's the funny thing too, right? Like, it's they're against this Charlotte Hornets team that has traditionally been just kind of like a disaster offensively, and they're making a huge push that we've seen through two games. I talked to Steve Clifford about it last night of like, no, they're going to shoot threes. Like, they're going to shoot threes. I thought they shot 31 threes in their first preseason game, and then last night they shot 29 threes. Like, they are going to shoot a ton of threes this year. And because Steve Clifford was like, you look at, you know, this is a direct quote I just transcribed. He said, if you look at trends in this league, last year of any statistic, three-point shooting percentage was the number one factor in why teams won. The five best three-point shooting teams were the four teams that played in the conference finals and the Clippers. All five of them were top 10 all-time in the NBA. That's the way this league has gone. Every year you can point at one or two things, but the three-point shot now, you know, it just makes sense. Create spacing. You've got to be able to shoot threes. And it's true. And they're going to, you know, I think it's tricky with them because they have a lot of iffy parts, and the offense system hasn't been great the last couple of years because they don't have a ton of weapons. But one, that'll create space for Al, and that's what, you want him to have space to operate because he's a monster. And two, like, it's just mathematically correct. And then you look at the Heat, who have talked about, we have to get creative with our three-point shooting. Oh, you don't want to leave our guys open. It's like, well, no, you kind of do because they don't shoot a lot of threes. Like, no one shoots threes on that team, and except for maybe Gerald Green. And they really are going to have to get pretty creative with how they create spacing. And at some point, they may just have to buckle down and, like, hope guys get hot from certain areas on the floor for threes. And otherwise, it might be, like, kind of, you know, they're not the same team as the Grizzlies, but it might be that kind of mathematical problem when you go against the better teams.
Yeah, and they are in a very similar place as the Grizzlies in that I don't mind that Memphis isn't going to shoot a lot of threes. Like, I'm as forward-thinking and progressive and three-point as anybody. Like, yeah. It makes sense to me, but I'm also just like, they don't have the guys.
Right.
Memphis fans are like, well, how can they get better at three-point shooting? I was like, they can't.
Right.
Like, it's not, you know, I like Clifford's approach in that, because Clifford, the Hornets can't win otherwise, and they're probably screwed anyway, and we'll get to that in a second. But I like it from the Hornets because their whole thing is basically like, all right, our offense is a disaster. We're not scoring twos anyway, so
we may as well go for the extra point.
Like, if we're not scoring twos, we might as well not score threes. Because we get a higher chance of putting up more points on the board. Like, I like that versus Memphis is like, well, no, we can win. Like, we can't do that. We can't shoot threes. Well, but we can find ways to win.
It's also a different gamble, though, right? Like, what do the Hornets have to lose by this?
Yeah.
You know, they kind of start creating a new culture. They start creating a new identity. It's, you know, the first year of this transition into that. And so, you know, they see where the league has gone and is going, and they want to try to get to that point. So for them, like, if they miss out on the playoffs because of an injury, but also because, you know, they're struggling to find their three-point identity, at least they're trying that and no one's going to kill them. Like, if the Grizzlies started chugging a bunch of threes and it didn't work and they fell out of the playoffs, that they have a lot to lose by that. They lose that momentum as a franchise, right? Like, the Heat, if they just start wildly chucking and don't make the playoffs in the East, you have a lot to lose. Like, there are different roles and expectations and existence and in different tiers in the NBA where the Hornets have maybe more freedom to try that, whereas other teams may legitimately, like, have reasons for being skittish toward that.
Every three-pointer that the Grizzlies take, whether it's Jeff Green or – Portland's pretty good, but Jeff Green or even Matt Barnes, that's a shot that Zach Randolph or Marc Gasol could be taking.
Yeah.
You know, versus with the Hornets, there's Al Jefferson. But outside of that, it's every three-pointer that the Hornets take is – that could be a step-back Kemba Walker jumper or a Tyler Hansbrough spot-up shot. So
– right.
Like, you can sacrifice certain things in the pursuit of that, but they're boned.
Oof. You know, I'm writing something that'll be up, I don't know, after this podcast is posted, so I guess go to CBSSports.com. But, you know, I wonder if their new approach to three-point shooting and this mathematical kind of, you know, trend with them is going to help make up for a little bit of what's missing with MKG, and not that he's a three-point shooter, but just his defensive impact. And this is still a very much defensive-oriented team. That's their identity. That's what they've been good with under Clifford, and that's what they'll still try to be because that's how they're going to, you know, be the team that they need to be. But still, like, you can try to make up for that stuff, but the team isn't totally talented enough to the point where you can absorb an injury like MKG. And we had all these, like, talks this summer, whenever the hell the contract extension was signed, of, of like, oh, is he really worth that money if he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that? That dude just dominates defensively. You're not going to see steals. You're not going to see blocks. All you're going to see is guys work their ass off for shots against him, and they're going to be missed for the most part because that's the kind of defender he is. And you take that away, and now like that defensive identity where, you know, oh my God, how did they have a great defense with Al Jefferson and Josh McRoberts or Al Jefferson and Cody Zeller as their big men? That was because MKG was awesome. And it took away a lot on the perimeter, and you take that away, and it's easier for guys to make up, you know, space in within the defensive concept. And now, like, Nick Batum's okay, but he's not the defender we've made him out to be, right? And he kind of has to be if MKG's gone, and then that wears down Nick Batum, and then they don't have the depth, and then Jeremy Lamb's playing a lot, and that's not good for anybody.
James Herbert says, how dare you? yeah, I wrote five things on it today. The biggest thing is I interviewed Clipper 2 years ago. I love talking to him. I love talking to coaches in general.
He's great.
I talked to him, and I was like, your rim protection and paint defense is awesome. You don't have a rim protector. How are you doing this? And he said, well, you know, the key is that we're able to help because we don't have to help our wings because we basically put our wings on an island, and we trust our wings, particularly MKG, to get stops. And when we're able to do that, that means that we're not out of position, and we can help down in the paint more and prevent that. And when guards see – you there willing and ready to help in down low, they can't get into the paint, whether it's wings or guards. So that's a big part of it. Well, now MKG's gone. So that goes out the rim. And so basically, like, I started writing theories, like theoretical lineups, and I was like, I guess you play Cody Zeller, and you hope that Zeller can be enough of a rim protector with his athleticism to factor for Al. And
I don't know.
And I mean, I really like where Cody Zeller's gotten to. Like, he made huge strides.
He's shooting threes now.
He's just absurdly, like, he's really athletic and super skilled.
Yeah, very skilled. Very athletic.
So, like, there's a lot that Cody Zeller can do, but you still do not have that presence inside, which means, and the other thing is, if he's out, I said, like, they got two options. They can move Marvin Williams into the three spot.
No, I don't agree.
Or you can slide Batum to the three and you start Hairston because they also don't have another combo guard. Yeah. Like, you can't start Kemba and Lin because Kemba's so small. Like, you can't start Kemba and Lin versus the Splash Brothers. Like, Clay will go off for 70 points.
They will play a lot of Kemba and Lin together in small lineups this year, but that was also, like, that's easier to do when you have MKG and Batum on the floor with them.
Yeah, and it's like it's a dynamic that they'll use.
Yeah, but it's not like a starting lineup.
I think you can do things. I think you can do, like, Kemba and Lin and Batum and then Zeller and Jefferson, like, in the starting five. Or, like, there's different things that you can do, and that's great. But it's just – it's also, like, people – for as much crap as he got about that jumper, and it really did. Like, he made strides on it last year. He shot 47% from the field last year.
Yeah.
You want to know why? Because he gets to the rim because he's a super athlete. He's a freak.
Yeah.
And without it, like –
and even like
Eagles, and I've got them as one of the bottom teams in the East. I think that this screws them. I think that he's too much of a linchpin for them. There's certain guys on teams that it's not necessarily about their talent. It's about what they've got behind them and what they do. And for me, like, you pull MKG out and the whole tub's going to drain.
Yeah. I mean, it just sucks. Like, then it just feeds into, like, I don't know. You should be concerned because he is kind of injury prone, right?
Yeah, I wrote it.
He missed 20 games 2 years ago. He missed more than that. Wow, he played like 50-something games last year.
Yeah, he was 55 and then 62 the year before.
He's never
played more than like 75 games. So, yeah,
so.
Yeah, and like a guy got onto me this summer was all like, he can't, like, he always gets hurt. And I was like, well, that's like, they're not really relevant. Like, he's a young guy and he doesn't have like a consistent problem. Like, he doesn't have like a bulky knee or anything. Like, this is still a good deal. Like, a lot of guys are injured on the rookie contracts and they come off of them and they're fine. And then, of course, he suffers his injury and that guy's like in my mentions, like gloating about a player getting hurt. And I'm just
which is always a great reaction to have.
I'm like, you know, do you have a mom? Do you have a mother? Because, like, did your mom teach you this? What would your mom say if she found you like, ha ha, this player got injured? Like, that's absurd. But yeah, there's definitely an injury concern. Like, there's no way around it now. I've read one stat online said that he's now going – at the end of this year, he will have missed at least 40% of his career games.
Whew, that's not like, great.
You know, I mean, and most of that's 25% this year. But it's still a lot.
Still a lot of games. And, you know, there is a concern with that. And, you know, it's kind of when we talk about – you know, we've talked about Kyrie Irving and we talked about Anthony Davis and now MKG. It's like you have these dynamic players – in their own respect, not saying MKG's on the level with those other guys, but these very important players to the construction of very, you know, kind of fluid concepts within, like Anthony Davis has to do everything. If he's gone, Pelicans are screwed, right? Kyrie Irving doesn't have to do everything anymore, but they really do need that dynamic on the floor next to LeBron because it just helps take a lot of the playmaking pressure off LeBron. And then with MKG, like, the linchpin of their defense is now gone. I mean, you just, it doesn't ruin teams necessarily, but it just sucks to have that young guy who you know is so important for the team, and he just keeps coming up, you know, 20 games here, 15 games here every season, and now with MKG 6 months maybe. It just, man, it sucks because you want to see what these guys can do, you know, fully healthy, full seasons. I think I almost just quoted Friday Night Lights in some way, but you know what I mean? see if they can't lose, you know? I mean, it's just, you want to see that, and now, at least with MKG, we're not going to see that this year.
Preseason this weekend, we both got screwed on the Clippers game.
Oh, the damn push. The great part was, though, that you had that. You had, like, you got the cover, and then Michael Malone, fouls for no reason. Down five at the end of a preseason game.
It's like, what are you doing?
And then it's Austin Rivers on the free throw line. And I've never given a crap about Austin Rivers making free throws in my life, but I was rooting for those free throws to fall. That's
so
how sad our lives are.
So bad.
You may think covering
down 19 at one point.
Oh man, when they were down 19, I was gloating. I was gloating about a preseason score differential.
can't count out those nuggets, though.
No, you can't. You may think that the life of an NBA writer online is glamorous, but no, it's just sweating preseason lines that we didn't even bet on. That all we did was Friday talk night. About on a Friday night. What a life.
Let's start there. I really loved everything about that game because I love that Chris Paul. Like, he could have just been like, I'm going to go through the motions. It's preseason. I'm still working his way in. And Chris Paul was like, I'm going to teach Emmanuel Mudiay about what the NBA is.
Yeah, he was going to put it on him. He was going to remind him that this is going to be a struggle at times.
I genuinely think in the back of Chris Paul's head, he was thinking like, this is good for him.
Absolutely.
Because he came out, I loved it. After the game, after Paul had like forced five turnovers on him and basically shut, he got to the point where Randy Foy, like they inbounded the ball to Foy and Moody was over on the left wing in the backcourt and was like has hands up, like, okay, give me the ball. And Moody and Foy was like, it's okay, kid. Just
like you've got heart. You're okay. We trust like, you.
We'll come back to you. You're the future, but there are veterans on this team, and we don't want to get embarrassed.
Right.
So we're just going to take a minute, and we'll come back. But after that game, Paul came up to him and grabbed him and talked to him for like 2 minutes and was like giving him instruction and telling him different things and like showing him like, when I do this, like you got to do that and you got to be ready. And then like gave him a hug at the end. And I was like, that's so great. Like, that's so awesome that Chris Paul was like willing to take his time out to this kid that's not on his team and just to be able to do this after he had just ruined that kid's. I also have to say though, as a guy that has to cover Mudiay for the foreseeable future, I'm very excited that he responded, that he settled down, came back, got his shot to fall a few times, made a few smart passes.
Well, one pocket pass on like the side pick and roll that was nice.
Nice. He had a half court. He had a left wing elbow to the right corner, one handed dish, which I love those passes that set up a corner three. I was like, he's got such. I noticed this with Russell too. Those two have such incredible instincts. Yeah. Like, they are just natural point guards.
That was
because
the thing,
they have understanding.
I didn't hate his shot selection. He took a couple bad shots, but whatever. He's a rookie. Like, that happens in the first preseason game. It's going to happen this year. And I really didn't hate his turnovers that much. You know, like, some stupid mistakes, but for the most part, like, he was trying stuff. And he's trying stuff against, you know, one of the best point guards in the world. And against a really good team, and like, I don't know, I like young guys making mistakes when it's good mistakes of like, I think I can make this pass, let me figure it out. I like the troubleshooting on the fly, and like you said, like he made adjustments and he settled down a little bit, and and his shot looked pretty decent. And he eventually you know, he settled into his role and he ran the team. And I think that, I don't know, like, I think you can look at it and be like, oh, he played like crap. And it's like, yeah, he played like crap, but he was trying stuff. And I don't mind young guys trying stuff.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Malone has said that they're going to be patient with him, and they were, and they're going to let him make mistakes, and he'll be better next time, and he'll be better after that, and as long as he stays healthy, knock on wood, then I think he's going to have a really good season. I think that he recovered very, very well. The actual most impressive thing about to me about that game was that somehow J.J. Hickson caught him at negative plus minus. I don't know how he does it. I don't know.
Oh, I know how he does it.
I mean, you have to understand, I have a complex relationship with J.J. Hickson, I would say, as a guy that covers him, in that he's gotten a lot nicer to cover in the locker room, and I actually thought last year he made real strides for the first time in being a okay defender, mm-hmm. defensively. He made, not okay, not horrific. Right. He was better, and that to me, if you try, that's why I'm okay with Vucevic in Orlando. If you try, that's all I want. That's why I'm fine with Greg Monroe. I only have problems if it's clear that you just do not care.
Right.
Like, Enes Kanter to me does not care. Right. Does not. He's just like, I can't be bothered by this. Like, that's a problem. But if you give effort, then I'm okay with it. But yeah, somehow Hickson wound up with a horrific plus minus on that. And he started him with Fareed, and that was the one thing I didn't want him to do. Like, it's the one thing he can't do. Of all the combinations, and like, I've preached and begged for them just for the Nuggets to start Fareed and Darrell Arthur together, and everyone thinks I'm insane. It's the only defensive combo with Fareed outside of Nurkic, and Nurkic is hurt, that has a positive net rating and a good defensive rating. It's the only one.
Well, Darrell Arthur, like, knows how to play defense.
Yeah.
Like, he knows how to play offense, too.
And Jokic looks really good. I'm fine with starting Jokic.
Jokic looked great. I thought LaVern looked great.
But you cannot play Fareed and Hickson together. No. They're redundant, and they wind up making the same mistakes that each of them make. They compound each other. Now, I will say, like, Kenneth Fareed, actually, I thought, had one of the best defensive games I've seen from him.
He actually looked really good defensively. I like the effort.
Yeah. Like, there was some good stuff going on there. It was weird because I wound up commenting a lot. I'm basically doing, like, preseason game thoughts on Facebook, and I wrote a lot about the Nuggets, and it wasn't necessarily the fact that, like, I cover them. It was just like, what do you want me to say about the Clippers? Like, they're really good. Like,
yeah,
we know that they're going to be really good. Like, it's, you know, Wesley Johnson started game two, Paul Pierce started game one. It doesn't, you know, Doc's right. It doesn't matter who starts.
Yeah,
it just does not matter.
I will say, for all the talk we've had this off season about their improved depth, and I do think it's improved, I'm not totally confident in this bench right now. And I know it's just preseason, but two games, like, I've looked at it and I'm like, eek. Maybe we just got, you know, a little swayed by names and,
well,
not actual players.
Lance Stevenson, Austin Rivers, and Josh Smith combined to shoot 9 of 29 from the field.
Hmm.
So that'll hurt your bench efficiency to a degree.
I mean, I don't have a ton of favorite preseason moments in my life because it's preseason. But watching a 2-on-1 break in which Austin Rivers doesn't pass the ball to Lance Stevenson, and he should have passed the ball. Like, Lance passed it to him, he should have gotten it back, and it's probably an easy bucket. But he doesn't pass it. Lance throws his arms up, and Mike catches him saying something like, Austin, you never pass the ball. Like, Austin, pass the ball, you never pass the ball. And then walking away as Austin is on the ground next to a cameraman, and then find out that Lance helped him up but had to be told to go help him up. That's up there for my favorite preseason moments of all time.
It was really amazing.
It was great.
I mean, it was...
It was everything you would think about those two players in one play.
With that plus Josh Smith, yeah. But, you know, it was preseason. I'll give it time. Yeah. Like, it's... I mean, it's gonna be... Here's the thing is... Lance Stevenson has got to get good. Like, this guy could be out of the league. That's how badly he's deteriorating.
Yeah,
like,
I was...
For as much grief as you've given Josh Smith has never played as badly.
Never.
In,
like, I mean, I'm...
14 months.
I'm very anti-Josh Smith the last 3 years, and it's not even close. I did talk to... I talked to a few Hornets people yesterday, and you know, we talked about Lance a little bit, and it was kind of just like the sentiment of... Like, we think he can play, he just didn't fit in needing to like think through our system, basically. Like that's why it was such a bad fit. And they're like, you know, there's no way he's actually a 17% 3-point shooter, right? And I was like, yeah, like you don't peg guys to be historically bad at stuff. And he had the worst 3-point shooting season of all time. And so, like, you can't really anticipate that. Like, I think that just happens randomly. But it is kind of a thing of, like, everyone knows he's talented, but how many guys have we seen in the league where, like, oh, that dude has talent, he just has to put it together, and then they don't make it, right? And then they're out of the league. And like Michael Beasley. Michael Beasley's as talented as Lance Stephenson. More so, probably. But you eventually have to be able to, like, turn the talent into a thinking man's part of the game. And they just haven't done that, or it looked like Lance was doing it, and now it's completely reverted. Like, I don't know.
You have to eventually not be Michael Beasley.
Right, that's exactly.
Pretty much what it comes down to. Other interesting notes from the weekend in preseason action?
Paul George!
That did not take long.
He's taken...
I've been, like, tracking this thing since...
I think you've written every post we've done about it.
Yeah, I have, because I'm just like, why is no one noticing this? That I think because people tend to think, you know, even the players, because they'll be like, well, we're just basketball players. Like Jameer Nelson told me that. He's like, you know, positions, okay, but we're basketball players.
Yeah.
And I think that works for guards, because they guards are like, you want me to shoot more? I can do that. You know, or if it's point guard, or if it's a shooting guard, it's like, you want me to handle the ball more? Great, I could do that. I'll shoot more. Yeah. And centers don't really have to worry about it. Like, center, you're never going to move a center out if he's a true center. Like, no one's ever gonna be like, wow, we're gonna move Marcus Gasol to power forward. No, like, that's never gonna happen. It's different with wings.
Yeah.
I talked to Thaddeus Young after, and god, I'm old, his sophomore season in the league.
Jesus.
The start of his sophomore season, and I asked him about playing 3 versus 4, and he was like, I feel like I'm a 3. I'm more comfortable there. That's where I want to be. And he's had this issue pretty much everywhere he's gone. As he's gotten older, he's pretty much been like, I have to play 4. Yeah. Like, the coaches just want me to play 4. It's what my life is. Like,
that's going to get Young me on the court.
Like, Thaddeus Young is basically Job of the NBA with everything he's gone through. And so at this point, he's just like, fine. All right, sure. But Paul George is in a similar spot. The wings do not like getting moved down. They don't like getting moved down. And so when Larry Bird was basically like, we're doing this, and then Paul George was like, I don't know, this doesn't sound like a great idea, we'll have to talk about it. And Larry Bird said, I don't care what Paul thinks. I was like, this is a thing, guys.
Well, the funny thing about it is, like, I don't know. I've seen some people killing Paul over, one, the hesitancy towards it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, we're at quite a few NBA games in person. Like, there is just a physical nature to it. And you can say, oh, well, then he's soft. Man, I don't know. Like, those are some big guys, and that is a lot of punishment to endure. And then to take that punishment when you're not used to doing it for your career, and then being asked to be a star on top of that, like, I get the hesitancy. I really do. Like, even the comments, like, if he's asked about it, maybe he should just give cliched answers and not talk about it. But, like, don't we kill guys for doing that? And then we're going to kind of roast him for being honest about it. Like, I do think there's a bit of a hypocrisy there. But at the same time, like, I don't know, maybe he shouldn't be talking about it the way he is. Maybe he should find a more, a more amenable approach to it all with the way he talks about it. Like, he's been kind of blunt about it, and I think that's admirable. But I also think, like, I don't know, there's probably some line he needs to tiptoe on.
I think it's contextual. The honesty question is one that gets brought up a lot. I don't necessarily think that because you're honest, that gives you license to say things that are going to hurt your team or hurt the league.
Oh, I completely agree. Like,
you're responsible for the things that you say.
Completely.
So if it's one of those things where you're trying to be, like, honest about the situation, that I agree with. Like, I don't like when we basically buy into tropes about you should always put the team first when you're like, well, I need to get paid. Like, this is a big summer. It's different when it's Derrick Rose, and he's the 9th highest played player in the league and hasn't been able to play much. But if you're like if Matt Barnes were to say that, I'd understand that. Because Matt Barnes was honestly underpaid for a lot of his career. There was a reason for it. But even then, like, given his contributions and the level he played at and the teams that he helped win, he was, I think, to a degree underpaid. And so if you're in that kind of a position, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, with George here, it was nice, though, I thought, because he actually went in detail. That was cool. And they've also got great beat writers in the end, including
Ken Buckner.
That talked about it and was like, hey, you know, he mentioned, you know, look, as the four, I have to hedge on the pick and roll and then recover on the roll man to guard the pick and pop, and then I have to go box out. Like, that's a totally thing that's outside my comfort zone, and it's a lot of work. And he also mentioned, this is the one that I think most fans won't get, is he mentioned, he was like, it takes energy out of me, and that's energy I need for offense, and nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
But it's a thing.
Like, it's absolutely a thing, and I think part of that is, okay, well, but now you've got Monte Ellis, and you have George Hill, and, you know, you've got this attack where you can maybe trust more. That doesn't mean they're not going to ask him to be a star still.
Yeah, and it's like George wants to be a star. Like, he wants to compete. He wants to be like he wants to be the guy that leads his team to victory, and he wants to do that with the skills on the offensive end, which he's shown.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, and he's not like a guy that you're trying to cover defensively. It's not like Melo, where you're basically trying to find somewhere on defense to hide him.
No, he's a great defender.
He's a great defender, and I think that's his thing. Larry Bird had talked about the summer about how he's like, we think it'll be easier on him because he won't have to chase those wings around screens. And Paul George is like, basically, yeah, but now I have to rebound against guys that are twice my size.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe he could average 10 rebounds a game. I don't think that, like, just because he can do it, you want him to.
Right.
Right? I mean, and I think that's something where, and granted, like, good news for him, he only has to face Anthony Davis two more times this year.
I thought maybe Anthony Davis, like, that, like, you got to give it time, man. Like, it's your first game against Anthony Davis, and, like, you say on media day that you want to give it a try. You got to be a little bit more patient than to say, like, this is not working after preseason game one. Like, if it starts out the season, you guys are losing, like, that gives you the excuse to be like, got to change it.
Yeah.
But it's also, I did think that when he was like, maybe it's something we can go away from, it's like, well, this is the problem with their entire approach, though, is, like, it's already too late for that, Paul. Like, they already made the roster changes.
Yeah, like, you're not going to get that possibility until most likely next summer. Maybe trade deadline or something happens, but most likely next summer. I tweeted about after the first game of, like, I don't think he's their stretch four next year. I think they go get another player to do it, and then he's back to the three. And I think that's kind of how it probably should be. It depends on the stretch four you can go get. But then people start throwing out, like, oh, if they could go get Channing Frye, how great would that be? And, like, that would be a great idea for them, right? Like, I think the world of Channing Frye. And he was so good in Phoenix, despite what one follower poorly tried to argue with me. But Channing Frye was awesome in Phoenix in his role. And I think that, you know, you can go get a guy like that. Maybe they go get Markieff Morris, who's not wanting to be a Sun and then wants to be a Sun and doesn't want to be a Sun. I don't know. Like, but I think that, I think eventually there will be more of a mixture of the attack because they'll have the personnel for it rather than just like, hey, Paul, you're our four from now on.
We'll see how it goes. It's one of those things where, like, you see the truck coming, and it's coming down the street, and you say, uh-oh, the truck's coming, and now, like, the truck is actually making contact with things. Yeah. You just acknowledge that there's a truck there.
Right.
A couple of fun games over the weekend as well. By the way, the Pelicans are going to be awesome. They're just going to score so many points. They're just going to score all of the points. Utah. And the Lakers played.
Yes, they did.
Let's go ahead and deal with the elephant in the room, the giant snake in the room.
So I didn't watch the game, but I went and watched as much as I could on Synergy this afternoon. Raul Nato looks great. I like him. You know who didn't look great in that game was Kobe. And first game back, granted, I get all that, and some people are saying, oh, just wait till the lights come on and everything's going to be fine. And, man, I don't know. Like, he wasn't moving well against Gordon Hayward. He wasn't moving well against Joe Ingles. Like, I'm really concerned. This isn't like – some people will be like, oh, you're doubting Kobe. Like, I'm not doubting Kobe. I'm doubting his health because of the last couple of years have been way too hard on his body. And you get that advanced in age, like, I think he'll have some moments. I think he's going to have a lot of bad moments, though.
There was a game last year I remember watching with the Jazz and Lakers. Maybe it was the year before. I can't remember. Kobe hasn't played in that long. And he was playing Hayward, and he, like, shut him down in the corner. Like, that's kind of the book on Hayward, is try and get him trapped in the corner, and you can force him into some bad decisions.
Yeah.
And he kind of bodied him and forced him away, and Hayward put up a bad shot or threw a turnover, having two times. And so this time he did the same thing to him, And then Hayward just worked him over and forced a foul, and it just looked sad. He also looked heavy. I can't really get around that.
Yeah, and you mentioned something to me. You said, like, you know, maybe playing his way into shape, and I think that's valid. Like, maybe he loses, you know, 5 pounds in the next month or so, and then he looks quicker once the season starts, and maybe that'll help some things. He definitely looked slow, and maybe that's the right way to put him is, like, he looked heavy. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, and I don't know what that's from. Maybe, you know, he added a bunch of muscle, but it did not look like muscle.
Yeah, we'll have to check Lang Whitaker's muscle watch. I didn't see that in the first edition, but I'm sure it's in there.
Yeah, Nito, though. Nito needs to start.
Yeah, I mean, Dante's out. Trey Burke hasn't hit a shot in his first 2 years in the NBA. Like, might as well. Like, Nito can play. He can play some point guard.
I'm not calling him Nito.
We're Nito? I honestly don't even know what it is.
I spent this morning typing out Ralzino a million times to try and learn how to write it, because I was like, now we're going to have to. Yeah, I thought he was really great. He made a blind pass to Tibor Pleiss underneath for a dunk, and I was just like, that's awesome. He just looked really sharp. Hayward has added so much muscle.
I'm a little worried.
No, I thought it looked great because he got his dribble cut off and then looped back around the other way to the baseline. And before, he would have been pushed off and bumped way out of bounds. And this time, he was able to finish through contact and one because he was basically a battering ram going into the bigger guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's put on a lot of muscle the last 2 years. And, you know, some of it will go away as the season goes because you just can't keep up that kind of training. But I don't know, man. I worry about Wings putting on a lot of muscle. But the nice thing is he doesn't look like he's slower because of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if he is fine injury wise, and I guess it's just my paranoia, no real actual reason to be worried about his injuries. But if he is fine injury wise, like, he will have that strength when he, like, turns the corner on a guy where the guy's done. I mean, it'll take a really special defender to reestablish that kind of leverage against Hayward when he has his dribble alive, and you could see maybe more like younger Paul Pierce type moves with him, where not the quickest of guys, but can, once he turns a shoulder on you, you're screwed.
Derek Favors is awesome. He was just, he's so good. He's really, like, he just evolved into the kind of guy that they need him to be. Also, I cannot fathom how big this Jazz team is. Like, Hayward, Favors, Gobert, Tibor, Pleiss, Withy, Trey Lyles is huge. They have so much freaking size.
Yeah, they got some good size.
I
really love, it was only a couple of plays, but just the way Rudy Gobert positioned himself on a couple of plays as the dump-off guy inside, it was just very, very, like, kind of Tyson Chandler-esque. Maybe even like a more like not prime Amari, but like little passes prime Amari, in terms of, like, he just kind of circled that area perfectly and was ready for the pass and went up quickly for a dunk whenever he got it. And it's not, you look at it like, oh, just throw lobs to him. Like, there are those plays where defender draws in and the big man can really screw up the spacing by not getting a right passing angle, and he got the right passing angle for the guy to deliver, and it was delivered. And so I think he could, I would never post him up, at least this season, like, consistently, unless he had a mismatch. But you can use him in that way and get him, you know, 10 to 12 cheap points every game just by doing that.
Julius Randle, I thought, looked good on offense. I think that he's going to be better by the end of the year than he is at the start. Defensively, he's got a long way to go. There's time, but that's going to be a problem, because what the Jazz pretty much did was they just pulled Hibbert out of the lane and attacked Randle in pick and roll and forced him to make the rotation.
Yeah.
And that was hard for him. I thought Clarkson looked good. I thought D'Angelo Russell looked really great. Surprised. Maybe we shouldn't have freaked out over his summer league.
His feel for the game is just incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everyone shot terribly. It's preseason.
Yeah.
And he only had 3 assists, but the assists that he had were quite sharp. Really, like you said, great feel for the game. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch, I think, this year. Lou Williams, I think, is going to – I like that they're giving Lou Williams some time at point, even though they have, like, 9 guys to play point at this point. That was really good. I thought Nick Young actually did some not terrible things, which was a nice refreshing change.
that's maybe the highest compliment you've ever given him.
Yeah, like he made a pass to Russell for a three-pointer on in transition instead of trying to go one-on-one. He made the right play, and then he gave really good effort trying to grab rebounds. He didn't necessarily grab them. He only had three boards, but in 24 minutes, like, I'll take that. And
there was one where he tried to go up for a rebound, an offensive rebound, and Rudy Gobert just came over the back of him.
Yeah,
like it wasn't a foul, but it was just like he just was engulfed in Rudy Gobertness at that point.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys on this Lakers team I like, though. You know, I like Tarik Black. I like D'Angelo Russell, Clarkson, Hibbert, Randall. I wish Kevin Michael Frazier had gotten some time. I wish Jonathan Holmes had gotten some time. Ryan Kelly's hair has to go.
Or just Ryan Kelly
has got to go.
He's not any good.
Got to go. So bad. I feel bad because I feel like Robert Sacre is probably like a really nice human being.
He's probably great, yeah.
And I just feel bad because every time he steps on the court, there are guys, and I'm sure you have this too, when you see them check in, when you're watching a game and they check in, and no matter, like, just underneath your breath, you just go, ugh. Like, that's how I am with Sakurai. I'm just,
yeah.
Like, I kind of want to watch this guy. Just don't want to watch him. But overall, that was a fun game, and I think that, you know, the Lakers scored 71 points, which is not optimal, but for a preseason game, I liked a lot of what they saw. Because, again, it's not about wins. Like, they don't, you know, they're about getting better this season and growing the new guys. And I think the veterans will help them win a few games. Like, they're going to be not terrible. And surprisingly, like, a lot of Lakers fans are being reasonable about this. Like, I got a lot, like, I said that last night. And people were like, that's all you can really ask for. I got a few, like, we'll show you. They're going to make the playoffs. But
right. I mean, yeah. that'll happen.
About the fact that there are back-to-backs in preseason.
Ooh. Right off the bat. Steve Clifford gave a great answer about this that I'm now in on back-to-backs. He said, for the preseason, he said, one, it's not like we're playing these guys 30 minutes a night.
Okay.
So it doesn't hurt in that respect because you're trying to get through your training camp guys and everything and see who can do what, and it gives you an opportunity to rest in preseason. And it's not like the regular season where you're just playing heavy minutes, you know, back-to-back nights. He said, and two, it gives us more time for practice during the week. So I thought there were two interesting points of, like, you know, we see the back to back in the, you know, in preseason, think of it as a back to back in the regular season. It's not really the same thing. It's actually a better planning strategy for them in terms of doling out minutes, getting guys rest, and giving maximum practice time. So I'm in. Steve Clifford.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. No, because I was the same way. Like, I saw that the Heat had two back to backs. In the preseason, I was like, what the hell is this? This is ridiculous. This is so stupid. And then someone just mentioned it to Clifford. And he was like, no, it actually helps us plan. This is why. So I'm in.
I guess if you're going to play all – because I guess that is a good point, right? Because, like, the Lakers didn't play a bunch of their good guys – not good guys, but interesting guys that are on the fringe of the roster. And,
right.
Although Blake Griffin played 25 minutes on a back-to-back last night.
Yeah, that I
– J.J. Redick played 22. Chris Paul played 23. He played the second most minutes of anybody.
That's just Doc.
Not ideal. Lance Stephenson played. Man, Lance played 25 minutes last night on back to back and was 0-for-4.
There's got to be a reason where you're just like, let's just tire him out. It's like a puppy. like just tire him out and maybe he'll go take a nap somewhere.
Josh Smith was 2-of-8.
It's just kind of a thing of like, oh, it's a preseason game. If we don't give Lance 25 minutes tonight in the preseason game, like, he's gonna chew our shoes up. Like, let's just get him tired.
Gonna chew our shoes up. Did you see movies this weekend?
I saw two.
What'd you say?
I saw Black Mass on Saturday, and then I saw, well, I guess I'm counting a Monday as a weekend because, you know, we were right online. But I saw Sicario this morning.
How was it?
Sicario is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, really phenomenal. Like, I don't have one complaint or criticism about the movie. Like, I was just, it's not like the best movie I've ever seen. It's just so damn good. It's just really well done. I was enthralled the entire time. The soundtrack's great. Acting's great. The story's really good. Benicio del Toro's phenomenal in it. By the way, he has incredible hair in this movie.
Yeah.
He has incredible hair in the first place, but, like, was really just, like, kind of mesmerized in a couple scenes by looking at his hair. And then Black Mass is good. Johnny Depp's really good in it. I thought most of the actors were really good in it. I was actually surprised at Cumberbatch's Boston accent or New England accent, where it wasn't, like, distracting in any way. But it's just, like, I don't know, this, like, not to give anything away, but, like, the second half of the movie, you're just kind of like, yeah, there it is. Like, there's no, like, There's no, like, crescendo to the end or anything like that. Like, the second half of the movie is just kind of like, and this happened, and now we're done.
You mentioned bad accents, like, distracting accents. I happened upon the Jackal the other day.
Oh, no.
And Richard Gere's.
Richard Gere's accent.
Which is up there for the worst of all time.
It's really not great. Yeah, that's kind of an all-timer.
I will watch Del Toro do just about anything. I've watched Traffic's been on a lot, I think, on FX, and yeah. I've watched like a million times lately, and I like it every single time.
It's he's very good at his job. That's what I would say.
Unlike Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, I never said Leo's bad.
You said he doesn't have range, I guess.
I don't think he has a ton of range. I think he's very good at what he does, but I don't, like, he's like in that Clooney when Denzel used to be good kind of range where it's like, you know, you're getting this out of that guy and it's great. But like, I don't see a ton of range. I don't think it's bad.
Del Toro's going to be the bad guy in the Star Wars that comes out after this one.
Sure.
I'll buy it. I'll watch that.
Yeah. You might be able to get me to care about Star Wars.
That tells you the power of Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah. Sam Jackson got me to do it. That ended up being a mistake, but but it happens.
Okay. Oh, you want to do Lie?
You know, yeah. We were gonna do Coach of the Year rankings. Do you want to do that, or do you want to set it for another day?
Let's do them quick.
Okay. You wrote up Coach of the Year rankings, which I misread at first and thought it was Coach rankings, which made me very confused when I saw that David Blatt was number one. Because you don't have the highest opinion of David Blatt.
No.
But then I read carefully. I actually read what it was, and it was Coach of the Year rankings. So
I think he's going to wind up winning. I think he's going to win Coach of the Year, and I'm going to grumble the entire way through.
Is he your pick?
He is. He's my pick. I'm going to complain about it and be like, this offense is nonsense. This defense isn't that good. I do not understand this.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a jackass about a lot of things. But... I also said in there, though, that he outcoached Stevens, Tibbs, and Budenholzer, which is absolutely true, and he outcoached Kerr for three games in the finals, which is also true.
True.
He made great tactical adjustments, and they won a bunch of games. Like, at some point, I do have to ignore whatever my perceptions are, as much as I believe in the process over results. I do have to look at the record and go, like, dude wins games. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of where I get to with George Karl, except I like George Karl. Like, I'm always like, George Karl wins games. You can talk all you want about snakes in the grass or anything else, and even the playoff stuff, but he's going to win 50 games more often than he's not, because he's done it a lot.
Yeah,
he knows how to coach.
He does.
Yeah.
30, you have Sam Mitchell, interim coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves. You're not leaving any room there for a possible, like, Doc Rivers, Orlando Magic, 41-41, let's give him Coach of the Year, because that was so surprising. How dare you?
I think you have to make the playoffs.
Are you saying the Timberwolves can't make the playoffs?
Yeah.
All right, that's fair. and that's why Terry Stotts is 29th, because Portland's not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's
if he gets Portland to the playoffs. I think if he even gets them like still in the race within the last 2 weeks,
that's
we should
like
give it to him.
Like, if they're within range, he deserves that. I'm the same with Carlisle. I'm like, if Carlisle gets that team to the 8th seed,
yeah,
I'll give it to him. Done. No problem.
Dwayne Casey's 27th for you.
Yeah.
That's a 48, maybe 50-win team.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is they know everyone knows that they're going to be good.
Yeah.
You never win if people know you're going to be, unless you're Pop. If people expect you to be good, you have to be great.
Right.
If people expect you to be okay, you have to be good. If people expect you to be bad, you have to be good. Or at least, you know, pretty good and promising. It's almost never given to the actual process of coaching. It's never really given because, you know, for me, 2 years ago, like, Jeff Hornacek should have been the pick, because Hornacek took a team that was supposed to be tanking and got them to within, you know, a hair of the playoffs.
Yeah.
That, to me, was a much more impressive job, making a team come together like that. With Casey, it's not – I think they'll do well here. I've got them for less wins right now, but I think that they'll be a better team. I think I will actually believe in them this season as opposed to last year when I rightly predicted that they were a total sham and a fraud. That you're just gonna let me get away with that?
Hey, that's up for James.
But I can't see a scenario in which he does a job that gets them to the requisite 55 plus wins
yeah.
to merit winning. And I don't think that him winning 47, 48 games is going to be enough for the voters to go, yeah, he's done a great job. Let's give it to him. There's a story attached to it. Like, Budenholzer won because nobody thought that Atlanta was that good.
Right.
And they won a ton of games. You know, Kerr would have won. He was second because, again, like, he took a team that was good and made them really great. And I've got Hoiberg and Donovan much higher than I expected based off of that theory that those are two teams that are in similar Mark Jackson, Steve Kerr type situations. Well, and there isn't a Budenholzer.
Well, I honestly, like, I'm kind of shocked that Steve Kerr is so low just because I think you could get a lot of, this guy should have won it last year. They did go to the championship. Like, you get those kind of votes.
Yeah, I think that's there. I liked the other guys ahead of him a little bit more. I also think it's unlikely that they're going to win as many games.
Right.
And if the voters will have a problem with...
They only won 62 games this year? What's wrong?
No, it's like, how am I going to give it to him when he won fewer games? Yeah. That's a stupid way to think about it.
Right.
It just is, but that's... Like, that's the reality of it.
So you're picking Blatt. My pick is Billy Donovan.
Woo!
Yeah. I'm
Rick Pitino's boy.
That's the reason. I think with a Rick Pitino taught system, he's going to escort his way into the win column. Was that too soon? Is that not acceptable? Am I gonna get
folks? Dun, dun, dun.
No, I think I'm crazy about this Thunder team. Even with the Enes Kanter contract, like, whatever. Burn $18 million if you want, but I'm gonna go out on the limb and say Kevin Durant is healthy and he plays 75 plus games, and I think they're gonna murder this year.
Yeah, we'll see. I have questions. I'm uncertain, but I'm not I like that there hasn't been a lot of hype. Like, there's just been, like, a reasonable amount of, like, that should be better. Like, this team knows what it's doing, and Donovan's going to make them a little bit better, and that should be enough. Versus, like, last year with the Cavs, when it was like, David Blatt's going to change the very face of basketball.
I wonder what Billy Donovan's going to do as a rookie coach. Also, I think if you can approach 60 wins, I think they'll be in the hunt for 60 wins this year. If you can do that with Deion Waiters on your roster... I think you deserve Coach of the Year.
You deserve. I agree with that. Let me just say that I am picking David Blatt in his second season as an NBA head coach.
I also
as the year after his rookie year as a coach.
I also have to say I see right through your reverse jinx of David Blatt.
Why is everyone accusing me of this?
I see right through it. I think it's dastardly. I think it's genius. But I'm not going to let you get away with not admitting that this is a reverse jinx of David
Everyone
Blatt.
Jumped on that this morning, and I was like, I finally gave him credit. Everybody wants me to give him credit.
It would be great. You should, like, when we do our predictions, you should put Tyronn Lue down for when he takes over in December.
Hedge the bets. In preseason action, the Sacramento Kings... Okay. This should tell you, if nothing else, about the Portland Trail Blazers. Say all you want about preseason.
Oh, boy.
The Kings are favored by 4 over the Blazers tonight.
Oh, God, we're doing lines.
Yes, we're doing this again.
Oh, Jesus.
Get on board.
Okay. All right, Kings, Blazers. Kings favored by 4. Sure. Why not? I mean, my God, I don't know. It's preseason. Like, I'll lay the points with the Kings. I don't know.
I'll take the Blazers plus 4.
Okay, sure.
Because they're going to have a more even minute distribution because they're all equally bad.
Oh, damn it. You know what this is going to mean? Like, I'm going to be sweating out preseason final scores, and I'm not, like, even in on it.
I'm pulling you in.
But you do this, like, you know, competitive thing with me that you know you can suck me into. It's like, all right, make a pick, and then I'm going to care.
I could do this with flipping a coin. Like, if the two teams were going to get together and flip a coin tonight, I could lure you into a competition.
Yeah, and I don't even have to bet on it. It's just like you make me make a pick, and then I'm like, all right, well, I want to be right. Oh, yeah, give me the Kings minus 4. Jesus.
The Warriors are facing the Raptors on a back-to-back. Warriors are at home, 7.5-point favorites.
I don't even know what that means. Sure, give me the Warriors, I guess.
I will also take the Warriors at 7.5.
Sure. Why not?
The good news is only 22 more days to go.
Oh, my God.
And you know when you podcast with James, you're going to do this.
Oh, I know. No, we absolutely will.
And he'll hate it more than you will.
Oh my god, you know what? I'm actually pretty soon, I haven't locked down a day yet, but I'm going to have Ian Carmel on. And I'm going to make him do lines for preseason games.
That's amazing. I'm setting my DVR.
Isn't there another game tonight? There's a the Nets are playing.
Those are the only two I have lines for.
Oh man, should we make up a line for Fenerbahce? I don't know if that's actually how you say it. Fenerbahce versus the Nets.
Let me see if I can get it on the Greek. Hang on.
Okay.
Nope.
Oh man. I'm just
Fenerbahce versus who?
Versus the Nets.
Oh. I'll take Fibonacci minus four. Let's put it at Nets minus 4.5.
Okay.
And I'll take Fibonacci.
I'm in. I'll take the underdog in this one as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Fibonacci plus 4.5.
Well, there you go. There's our sadness for the day. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, Zach.